This is Beyond Mentorship with Dr. Nimrod Mbele, a show that matches business mentees with exceptional mentors to provide the skills and knowledge to navigate the entrepreneurial journey. Beyond Mentorship is brought to you with the compliments of Plus 94 Research, the science of decision making.
A very good evening to you, and welcome to this week installment of Beyond Mentorship here at 101.9 High FM as well as 91.9. I'm always honored to be sharing this space and time with you as we discuss pertinent issues from the perspective of my esteemed guests who are knowledgeable in their environment. In the meantime, allow me to express my views or my rather. Gratitude to the Overdrive team led by Michael McKenna. Thank you very much, Michael, for the job well done. Michael and the team are back on your radio tomorrow at the same time. I also want to express my gratitude to Greg Guthrie, who's on the controller, and of course, Betsy, the producer of the show. If you miss any of our previous conversation, not to worry, simply go to the High FM website, which is www.highfm.com, and look for Beyond Mentorship link. I'm sure you've got lots and lots of questions that you may want to post for my guest that I'm about to introduce right away. Our SMS line is 3459. The Telegram is 061-895-1019. And of course, your views and thoughts are most welcome via my IX handle, which is _@DrMbele. We have got two segments to our conversation. One would have been with Vusi Tembogwai, who is a CEO at My Growth Fund, and the focus would have been, I'm saying it would have been, so because we've just been told that unfortunately it can't be, we won't be joining us.
Okay.
And which means Denise here, Zelensky, who's my next guest, would obviously have all the time to discuss very, you know, pertinent issues around the real estate. This is where we are at. I'm sure, as I'm saying, I'm now joined by Denise Zalescu, who's a CEO and a founder of Fritz.
Real Estate,
and the gist of our conversation is about the real estate market in South Africa. And I'm sure this is a face or company that is known to you, and obviously listeners of the show, and pretty much beyond the kind of market that the High FM captures, because this is a brand that is well known. And I'm sure you've got questions for Denise. Please weigh in. Our SMS line is 3519. The Telegram is 061-895-1019. So, perhaps maybe as we set the scene, Denise, and by the way, thank you very much for coming through.
It's a pleasure.
You know, in setting the scene, Denise, one looks at, the real estate the market in South Africa. Obviously, that sector plays such an important role in the economy. The last time I checked, real estate contributes to us between anything between 5 to 6% to the GDP. So it's a really strong sector within the economy, and obviously it's growing from time to time. Obviously, there are a lot of challenges associated to it. But from where you are standing, what would you say is the current what is the current state of the real estate market in South Africa?
Hello, Nimrod, and thank you for having me. At the moment, there's a lot of optimism in the market. I'll give you an idea. A property came on the market last Thursday. It was loaded onto the internet, and by Friday morning, we had 30 calls for that property. Now, the reason was that the property was priced right, and the area was in demand. And obviously, we don't have that kind of response for many properties, but that just gives you an indication of the optimism with the GNU today and proposed rates coming down. I think people have put a lot of the dramas in the past behind them, realize South Africa is quite a good place to be, nowhere to run, and a lot of people are coming back from overseas at the moment, people that are expats, and we're looking forward to real growth that we haven't seen for very many years.
It's quite interesting that you obviously express a very positive outlook of the real estate market.
Yes.
One, the price, obviously, given the low interest rates that has been expected, Also making reference to, obviously, the demand. But what's the demand side like? Because obviously market will dictate the price, you know, if and it also depends on variables such as where you're looking at. So just overall, what is the basis for optimism that you're referring to?
I think the basis that we're looking at the moment is before the elections, most people didn't really know what was happening. And now there's more certainty. And apart from that, you have your upcoming middle class that perhaps never owned homes before or only rented. And now the banks have been quite lenient for the last while, but the interest rates, no one knew where they were going to. Would they increase? Would they decrease? Now, we've been told that they will decrease. What we don't know, is it going to be 25 basis points or 50 basis points at the moment? And if it is 50 basis points now and again in November, I think we'll all be talking a lovely story next year.
Well, it's good to hear, particularly when you went back to issue of policy certainty, because the market always respond positively on the basis of how the environment looks like. I mean, GNU has brought some level of stability and predictability in terms of the market. That's your observation based on what the land looks like in the property space.
Yes, and the response we get from our buyers, from advertising, we measure. Very, very many different sources of different advertising and marketing that we do, and it depends on the response to it. So we're still finding that properties up to 3 million, we find that there's more response, a quicker response to those kinds of adverts, and those properties will sell quicker. But it's still sensitive, as optimistic as we can look into the future. At the moment, the prices have not increased. There are just more people out in the market looking. And I believe it's going to take a good 6 to 9 months before prices even start to increase.
Those are very interesting observations. You've just joined us. We've just literally started our very beautiful conversation around property market in the country. I'm joined by Denise Zalinski, who's the CEO and founder of First Realty Estate. And the gist of our conversation, obviously, is the supply and demand of property in South Africa. And you know, the sense that I'm getting from Denise here is that there's a very good level of optimism in the market because of the GNU. Obviously, there are a lot of contributory factors.
Absolutely.
But it's good to hear that there's obviously a burgeoning of a middle class that is coming looking for property, that also even the banks are more reasonable. But what would you say, banks reasonable means to somebody who's listened to the show, who is interested in buying property, and say, okay, Denise said, the banks is more amenable.
Could you
maybe? Yeah.
Okay, if I can elaborate on that. If you're a first-time buyer, the banks will give you up to 108% bond. That means 100% to purchase the property and the 8% that will go towards transfer and bond costs, all the legal fees and the transfer duties. That actually means someone who's never bought a home before can purchase a property and get the full purchase price and cost. So they don't necessarily need money, but they need the means to be able to pay the bond and upkeep the home as well at the same time. And obviously the normal rates and taxes and lights, water, etc. So it's a case with new first-time buyers to educate them. And a lot of people are forgetting, or don't take into account that these people need to be educated, need to be told exactly what's going to happen. Often the banks will grant a bond over a 30-year term, and it will be a lesser amount to pay off on a monthly basis, which makes it very easy. What we advise our clients and we show them is that it might be for 30-year term to start, but it doesn't need to take 30 years to pay off and to add a little bit, as their salaries increase, so to add that much more to the bond repayment when they can.
This is a very interesting point that you're making because, education also says you don't have to pay your bond over a 30-year period. Mm. You obviously can pay a little bit more, and when the interest rates are low, pay a little bit more.
Absolutely.
And when interest are up, when they go up, you can try and maintain how much. So how much of education do you think first-time buyers do need, over and above just the payment model? What other issues do you think needs to come through for someone who's buying property for the first time, such that they're able to enter that particular space with very good understanding of what is it that they need to be?
So first of all, they have to be told. First of all, they have to ensure that they qualify for the bond. So today one introduces the buyer to a bond originator who finds out for them pretty quickly that there's various sources that they can find out, to pre-approve the client. And once they have that amount, if they're, for instance, earning 60,000 Rand a month, a third of that, you know, that's a maximum that the banks want to see that they can afford, say, 20,000 Rand. But since 2007, when the Financial Act came into being, the banks now look at affordability, not only income in ratio to payment. So provided they don't have a Porsche in the garage and send two kids to private schools, you know, they would be able to spend that third of their income on the bond repayment. But you asked me about education. I think it covers quite a wide, there's many aspects to it. So it's the affordability, it's the to find out how secure the person is in the employment, to find out if there's two salaries that would basically be paying off the bond, to explain to a client who's never owned a property what rates and taxes are, what effluent rates are, add the approximate electricity. So dealing with an agent, it's a good idea always to ask them, you know, to give them a copy of the lights and water. We still old-fashioned and call it lights and water account. And today there is prepaid electricity and so forth. But to actually sit with your client or in a classroom, if one's giving a lecture to first-time buyers, and show them these are the figures and these are the amounts that you would need on a monthly basis, and we advise you to put a certain amount away every month for repairs and maintenance to the home. The home does get old. You notice, I'd say 5 to 8 years, you need to look at the painting again. And it's, you know, do you have that affordability that you'll be able to maintain your home properly?
Well, these are very interesting insights that you're sharing with us, and I'm sure more and more are coming. Let's take a break. We'll be back in a second.
This is Beyond Mentorship with Dr. Nimrod Mbele. It's brought to you with the compliments of Plus 94 Research, the science of decision making.
Welcome back. This is Beyond Mentorship. My name is Nimrod. I'm joined here by Denise Anitsky, who is a CEO and founder of First Realty Estate. And we're really giving a good insights on the property market and what it means, especially for the first-time buyer. Before we went to the break, the few points that Denise shared with us, which I think are very important. First and foremost, that the entry market or those that are buying property for the first time, the good news, the bank do accommodate pretty much everything. But based on Denise's views, that one, they look at the obvious affordability, and two, they look at the security, how many people are earning a salary. If you know, man and husband, yes, a couple is working, affordability issue comes easier. There's also issues around, you know, whether you are able to maintain the property over a period of time. And the and most importantly that I picked up from Denise is about how much knowledge each buyer needs to be empowered with. And the best person, obviously, you can Google some of these things, but it is best when you deal with a real an agent who is knowledgeable of the sector, and so on and so forth, because they'll be able to respond to some of the questions that one may have.
Yes, and then also the questions, or a good agent will be able to tell the client which schools are in the area, shopping centres, bus service or taxi service, etc. So these are all things to take into account. You know, you'd find someone will come along and fall in love with a property, then find that they're paying 100 Rand a day on transport. So, you know, then you'd give them a sort of different advice. So it's for the agent dealing with a client to find out as much as possible, and for the purchaser to ask as many questions as they can.
I mean, to your point, which most people don't really, especially don't really take into account. If the school is like 30, 40 kilometers away, it doesn't make sense, you know, to buy property, because your actual cost of transport for your kids, petrol, It just throws you out. You might like the property, but in the long term, you have to sit down, calculate how much you're going to cost per day, per week, per month, just on one variable, transport.
Yes.
And you then you have to go back and say, does it really make sense? The property is beautiful, but I've got kids who are pretty young. They'll probably be in the school environment for the next, you know, 10 years. How much in 10 years would I be spending on just on transport?
And time.
And time. So these are very useful points that you're sharing with us. But as we proceed, Denise, could you just give us a sense of what is the most, you know, what are the trends in terms of residential and commercial property? Because this show is listened by a wide range of clients or individuals who others obviously might be looking for property. Now we have dispensed pretty much with first-time buyers.
Yes.
And there's a bit of nuggets that you shared with us for first-time buyers. But what does it mean in terms of residential and commercial estate sector? Where are we in the country?
So in terms of the I would say, properties from 3.5 million upwards, we do have buyers in South Africa. We're quite surprised at the number of what we call cash deals. That's where they don't need bonds. We don't take cash, as in someone walks in with a suitcase, but, you know, there's no finance required on the deals. And a lot of people are changing suburbs. They're either upgrading or downgrading. So often you'll find a young couple will move from an apartment into a house with a garden, and, you know, you get to age 60 or whatever, and then your kids are out of home, and it's a downward situation where you're now looking for the apartment again. So we're finding where there are beautiful apartments, pretty upmarket. If we look around in areas such as Glen Hazel, Melrose, Sandton, and people are leaving these very big houses, there seems to be a shortage of the kind of property that these people would like to move into. It's generally, they're looking for security, they're looking for peace of mind, lock up and go, lots of security, very important. And if we take into account what's happened to the property market in the last 6 to 7 years, development sales virtually came to an end. We now see a couple of developers coming back into the market on that range. But I think it's going to take another couple of years of where people feel comfortable now to get involved with a new development. At our company, and I'm saying surprisingly, we've had quite a number of sales recently in the 8-9 million mark on new developments. And they're basically cluster properties where there's maybe 600-700 square meters of size, some even smaller, where the client wants the security, lock up and go, but they want their own garden. They don't want to move into the apartment. But the people who move into clusters at once, some stage, as they get much older, they'll then want an apartment. So I always say that's what keeps us, you know, in the real estate industry busy, because life happens and people move on.
I do like the idea of security. I do like the idea of calm, because which is associated with gated community.
Yes.
Because that is a unique selling proposition.
Yes.
Security, calmness, and so on and so forth. And obviously, this is obviously a big market in South Africa. And based on your experience, you know, there's more and more, obviously, when the land gets shortage, you know, when there's a less, you know, less supply of land and more and more
demand
and people are likely to gravitate towards more of a cluster. So this is obviously a norm in South African context.
Yes, yes, in very many areas, and I would say areas like Harton, Sandhurst, Hyde Park, Melrose, where there were traditionally acre stands of 4,000 square meters, and municipality now is very, they're promoting densification, which, so they started off with first saying 4 clusters per 1,000, you know, 1,000 square meters per cluster. Now, then they went to 6, and now you can do, even in some of the areas, do 8 clusters on an acre.
Now, these are very interesting observations, because It does say that, you know, South Africa's landscape is actually changing. This is typically what you find in Europe and in the States and elsewhere. So it's quite interesting that that's where we're getting there. But two issues that are linked to property, rental property and you know, obviously buying of property. Because what is the landscape between those? Because most people are renting. And do you see that as do you see a change in the renting space? Is it on increase? Or
so, on that basis, our rentals in the last few months have definitely increased. Rental demand, I should say, has definitely increased. We also find that people from being transferred, whether it's from Cape Town to Johannesburg or London to Joburg, whatever, you'll find they all want to come in. It's a corporate client and rent for a three-year period. It's pretty often, but otherwise you have people who are selling and then find that, you know, they will rent in between buying. Other people who are renovating will rent at the same time. It depends on the market. The big family homes will be rented out, and depending again on the market, the highest rental we had in the not too distant future was 120,000 per month for a property in Morningside.
But it's quite high.
Definitely.
And that obviously meant for a different target market already, because that's not somebody.
No, that's not the norm. The normal, it depends on the area. Some areas will achieve 6,500 rand a month for one bed apartment, I'd say. But you get bachelor apartments at 4,000. Your typical apartment, I'd say two bed, two bath. Anything, we're talking Johannesburg at the moment, so anything between, again, we're sitting in Glenhazel, so Glenhazel for the next 10 kilometres would be around 8,500 to 10, perhaps even 11,000. Once you get out of towards Four Ways area, the North Riding and so forth, you'll be able to get a similar property at 8,500. So we find a lot of people will rather spend less and travel into the city centre.
And I think, that's definitely one of our, you know, to your point that we raised earlier, that, you know, where you find property, amenities, it's a big ticketing, you know, obviously it's a big selling point.
Yes.
Schools, you know, gyms and shopping complexes, because the closer you are to, you know, transportation and other important aspects, the better for. And obviously that also influence the price, isn't it?
Yes. So you'll find properties that are close to Hyde Park, again, Sandton, Rosebank, will sell at around 1.5 to 2 million to 2.5 million, and they will rent out at around a 15 to 16,000 rand a month, close to the centres. The further away you go, so the prices decrease, as I said.
But we all know that COVID has done a huge blow, not only to real estate, but pretty much all aspects of the economy. How much rebound have you picked up or noticed on the real estate market?
So the most important thing that I see is that fewer people go into the office on a daily basis. So what's resulted is basically that there's a lot of the companies have said we don't need as much space. They have hot desks in their office and people come in two or three times a week. So that has definitely impacted on the commercial world. And yet if you're driving around, I don't know when the last time, if you ever walked around Sandton or Rosebank, you'll see that they don't stop building commercial buildings. Mm-hmm. So we're expecting a lot of growth. There's a lot of optimism.
It's quite interesting because I thought you were going to say you've seen some of the buildings empty, but that's not the case.
They are empty, but the only way we know it's empty is because the lights don't go on. But there is, you know, if you actually see a suburb by walking. Mm-hmm. So I love walking through the centres and around, you know, the mini city centres, put it that way. And there are so many properties that are being built as we speak, office parks, office complexes, offices for individuals, And it's just a situation of walking around or driving around to notice.
It's very interesting because it does say, it does speak to the vibrancy of the South African economy, because ordinarily, given the how COVID has shaped the working environment, with people spending less time in office and people having offices in their own homes, that would have somehow dampened the spirit or dampened the pace, if you like, the pace of construction. But it hasn't, in your view, it's not stopping. It's actually...
Yes. Well, you look at the very big construction companies and developers, their business continues. And I think, they more cautious than they used to be. They're doing a lot more homework and who the target market is before they start. But there is building.
Thank you very much. I think that's a very useful point. I'm sure you must be, I'm sure there's a lot of comments that ought to be coming our way. I mean, I urge you to give us your thoughts, your views, any particular question that you want ask Denise. Our SMS line is 3419. The telegram is 0106185109. She's here. She'll be happy to respond to any question that you have. And as I said, I've got Denise Zelensky, who's the CEO and founder of First Realty Estate, giving us the nuts and bolts of the real estate environment. So far, please give us your voice, give us your thoughts, give us your views. She'd be more than happy to respond to your questions. But as we proceed, Denise, one of the issues that, I think it's quite interesting that we see more and more building taking place, and it does give confidence on how the economy is likely to perform foreseeable future. Obviously, there are a lot of variables that come into play. Stability is one of them. Interest rates that are low, it's one of them. And more and more middle class that are emerging. So there's a lot of positivity all around, irrespective of whether we're dealing with commercial, industrial, and homes.
Yes, when you mention industrial, that seems to always be in demand. So we're seeing it a lot, particularly in the East Rand.
And obviously, what sort of demand? Because I'm sure someone who's listened to the show say, you mentioned East Rand. What sort of demand is there for commercial property? Which areas can we look at? Who is the, what are the price range in that? Are you able to share any thoughts, views?
Well, I think on the East Rand, and then again in Stradham Park on the northwest, basically, you have a lot of the warehouses and smaller factories. And that is where people, it's very positive seeing that people want to get in, want premises there, and they are trying. I remember at one stage, going back a couple of years, people said, no, I don't want to, I'm not trying anything, what's going to happen to South Africa? And I feel like I'm repeating myself, but people are now asking the questions, and we're seeing a lot of buyers come to the fore.
Because I think, to your point, Denise, it is how we project ourselves. And South Africans are sometimes, we are worse enemies, particularly, bringing, everything down. There's a lot of good work that has been done. There's a lot of positivity that is taking place. And it's just a matter of lifting up, lifting up more good stories.
Right.
About how the economy is performing and prospect, because there's no country that doesn't have its own issues.
I think today everybody has its issues, and it's very interesting to see, as a result of so much turmoil in the world, that a lot of people that might have wanted to leave are now saying, okay, let's stay. I just want to add something to that, is that on the investment side, you often hear, you hear a lot of people sitting talking about the share market, and I put money offshore and I've made so much. But those people have the money. We're looking at people from the investment point who can buy a property without any money. And as long as they have the will to hold the property, it's going to increase in price. So we've had a 9-year a 9-year period where property prices have not increased. went up a little bit in about 16, 17, and then it's been straight line and even down since then. So if anyone's thinking on investment properties, just remember you can get the finance from the bank, and you might not be making as money as quickly as you would on the stock market, but long term, you're not laying out your own funds.
That is an operative word. In the long term, you are likely to make money. On that note, let's take a break. We'll be back in a second.
This is Beyond Mentorship with Dr. Nimrod Mbele. Is brought to you with the compliments of Plus 94 Research, the science of decision making.
Welcome back. This is Beyond Mentorship. My name is Nimrod Mbele. I am joined by the one and only Denise Zielinski, who's a CEO and founder of First Realty Estate. And we're really giving a good sense of how the real estate market is faring in South Africa. And it's very good to hear that there's a lot of positive energy out there in terms of investment. Before we took that break, one issue that you raised that I want us to just hone a little bit more is the fact that, you know, the pricing hasn't really increased, which means it's a good opportunity for anybody to invest. Could you just elaborate a little bit more on that, please?
Yes. So what we find, people for various reasons have to sell. So whether it's they've been transferred, well, as I say, various reasons. And we had a situation with a property out near Four Ways where there were five or six, it's a very big complex, and five or six one-bed properties all selling around 565-70. And the seller, with negotiating and so forth, we found a buyer for a 520. And the response to that 520 has been phenomenal. So what does that show us? It shows us the market's not responding at 560. So it's very, very sensitive. And our buyers are educated. They make themselves, they become familiar. They go into Prop 24 or private properties and that, or our own websites, and make themselves familiar with what's available. So the client who really wants to sell, listen to your agent, ask them to show you the statistics and why, when they give you advice on what price to ask for the property. Remember, they're not trying to get you to accept a lower price unnecessarily. It's because they're seasoned in the market and they're sensitive to what the buyers will pay at this particular time. So when you find a property where you hear a person says, I've been on the market for a year, I can't sell, the first thing we say is, well, look at your pricing. Let's see, have you overpriced for the area you're in? Have you overpriced for the condition of the property? You know, it's very well to say, oh, my neighbor got $4 million for their property. I also want $4 million. Well, on what is it based? Mm. Does it have a swimming pool? Are the walls the same? Does it have a borehole? Solar paneling today is very popular. Mm. So you're not going to get a higher price if you have solar, but people will buy the property easier. This is what we find.
Now, these are very interesting points that you're sharing with us, because you are saying to a would-be seller, there are a lot of issues that you need to think of, because the supply and demand issues takes into account what investments, what is added value to your property, whether you're talking solar, whether you're talking electric fence, whether you're talking any other beautification, so to speak. And so you can't just look for a higher price without looking at other investments that you have incurred.
Yes.
And the area also is, I would imagine, it's a big ticket price. You cannot overcapitalize your property in area that is not, it's not ideal or it's not in demand.
It's the word demand there is the right word, I think, Nimrod. And areas change, you know. Once upon a time, if someone could afford to live in Observatory, it was fabulous, you know. It was the Harten of Johannesburg. Mm. But areas change. Today in the Observatory, you can get the most beautiful, beautiful home for $2.5 million. Phenomenal. Bramley once was, if I'm going back 30, 40 years, people strive to live in Bramley. Today you get an absolute palace in Bramley for 2.8, 2.9 million. So where the average price there again would be, say, 2.2. So someone's going to say, well, that person's asking 2.9, why? And you have to be able to show them why and compare the accommodation and compare what's been sold with the property, the size of the stand.
Absolutely. There's a very interesting point of said. I think you've got a point from a phenomenal individual here by the name of Eric Stillerman, who is a...
Oh, I know Eric. Hello, Eric.
Thank you very much, Eric, for posting. Keep them coming. The other point that you raised, which I think is quite phenomenal, and it's the property. We've got residential property, we've got commercial property. We also have land.
Yes.
As an investment, because we're also looking at investment opportunities. What is the status of land availability and the extent to which there's a demand for land to build either residential, commercial, or even industrial property
yes.
outside Sydney? Your take on that?
Right. So, again, the last 4 or 5 years, there hasn't been the demand. And we've seen beautiful pieces of land being sold at a price that they could have bought it 10 years ago, and the sellers can't achieve a higher price than they would have bought 10 years ago. And other pieces of land selling at reasonable prices. But at the moment, if the property isn't rezoned, it depends where it is. If it's on a really busy road and it's got beautiful signage and they'll get the right kind of rezoning, the land will sell at a reasonable price, a good price. But if you just tucked away and you've never even applied for rezoning and you call the agent and you say, look, I think I can get 10 townhouses here. I want XYZ. Years ago you could get away with that because there was a demand for land, and wherever you looked there were small developments of 20, 30 units, you know, coming on the market. I'd say the last 6-7 years in terms of development sales of sectional titles have been very, very quiet. Mm-hmm. And having said that, there's a glut of sectional title properties available at the moment. And the second-hand, when I say second-hand or pre-loved, it seems that the levies are becoming so expensive that the person who could afford the bond cannot afford the levy. So people who want to sell are often being forced in a way to reduce the price to accommodate for the levy, for the purchaser paying the higher levies.
These are very interesting points that you're sharing with us. Going back to the issue of land as an investment portfolio, if you like, and, you know, I've had instances in the past where someone said, look, Nimrod, there's 10-acre land available just outside Orange Grove. And I'm like, this is obviously a beautiful piece of land, and the investment opportunities are just enormous. And what sort of issues anybody who wants to buy land on a skate, because the first thing that comes to mind is, you know, bulk water system.
Services.
If there's nothing that has been done, is it a worthwhile investment to do? What is it that you need to take into account when someone gives you this big piece of land, this parcel of land that it has a lot of potential, but not much has been done, and you don't even know?
Right. So in that instance, it's most probably agricultural land, and it hasn't been rezoned. The best thing to do is to meet with the town planner, who would investigate on your behalf what the council's points on densification, what they would allow in terms of rezoning, the height. Could it be an 8-story building, a 2-story building? One would have to find out the number of units that could be built. And again, services. You mentioned water, electricity. This seems to be a problem wherever you are. You have to be able to ensure that, you know, there will be a water availability. And then again, obviously, connection to Eskom or whatever for electricity.
So these are obviously points that if somebody sells you a parcel of land, you now need to go to municipal and say, what is the rezoning plan?
So if I could contradict, sure. It's if someone were to offer you, because no one will buy the land without knowing all the factors. So, and you know, sometimes we've often towards Lanseria Way. Now, one day it is fantastic in how it's grown, but if somebody comes along and says, look, I've got 5 acres or 5 hectares of land, I want X, and you'll say, well, how do you make the X? Oh, my neighbor or someone down the road managed to build 100 units, you know, and they're all under 500,000, and I'm sure they'll sell. The question is, will they be able to get the bulk services that we need, etc.?
That's a very good point. Let's go quickly. Let's take a break. We'll break in a second because that's a very useful point. Because a lot of people who obviously crave land, parcel, and they want to invest, and this kind of inputs that you are sharing with us, very useful for those prospective buyers of those pieces of land. We'll be back in a second.
This is Beyond Mentorship with Dr. Nimrod Mbele. It's brought to you with the compliments of Plus 94 Research, the science of decision making.
Welcome back. This is Beyond Mentorship. My name is Nimrod, and it's time flies when having fun.
Absolutely.
I'm joined here by Denis Zelinski, who's the CEO and founder of First Realty Estate. Before we took that break, you know, very important points that I, you know, put to you, and your response was quite remarkable, particularly from investment point of view, i.e. land, because there are a lot of, especially in area that you've mentioned, outside Lanseria and towards Orange Grove, further down, there's a lot of pieces of land, you see boards for sale and what have you. So you're saying, once you express an opinion or express an interest. In procuring a particular piece of land, so you need to go through, go consult the Muni official and say, what is the plan around bulk services here? What is the plan for electricity? And when will it be done? If it's going to be done in like 10 years, is it worth buying?
Well, I think today the municipality will insist that the developer would have to bear the cost of it. But can the municipality actually, have they got the ability to service that? So you see with the new estates and so forth. But if we come close and in where there's existing towns and cities and you divide, we're finding dividing the land, as we mentioned earlier, or putting on an acre of land, you can get 20 to 30 units on an acre in a really, really nice built-up area. Can the services now carry the 30 units instead of the one house? So it's perfect, and that's what we need in South Africa, the densification, that people won't have to live so far away and travel in. But our services don't allow for it, or the municipal services don't allow for it.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you. There are beautiful properties around Glen Hay and Glen Austin area.
Those
beautiful, humongous pieces of land that are going next to nothing. The issue, I suppose, is, you know, the appropriateness for densification.
That's it.
You know, so they were meant for one or two units because those were used to be farms, so one or two units. So there's a huge investment in terms of infrastructure, bulk water infrastructure that needs to be done. So that's a very useful point. You know, I'm enjoying this kind of conversation. I hope the listener will share the same sentiment. But as we, you know, drawing closer to our beautiful conversation, there are a lot of up-and-coming or aspirant real estate individuals or entrepreneurs.
Yes.
What would you say are the requirements for somebody who wants to venture into this space that you've been in for the past 20, 30 years?
40
years, and still counting.
Absolutely. I don't know how I'd get by if I didn't walk into the office every day. But I think the right fit for there's so many of real estate is the most wonderful profession. It gives someone the flexibility, but you can also work 24/7 if you choose. So if you need to run out and fetch kids at 1 o'clock, that's fine. But at the same time, no one stops you working at night. It's not easy. It's high risk, high reward. You only earn if you sell. And for someone new coming into the market, I find people over the age of 25 at least. The client is dealing with you. It's the most important or the highest asset that they own usually. And they want to feel comfortable that the person they're dealing with has life skills, no, not a child out of school. So I would say if they have a tertiary education behind them and must have their own car, must have a phone. Everyone has a phone today, a laptop. You have to be mobile. So, you know, if a client wants to you can take an offer while you're with the client. You have to have everything with you to be able to do this. And I think the biggest the biggest problem for people coming into the market or coming into real estate is they don't have their own vehicles. And okay. they can have the best personalities, have so much, you know, they go to varsity and get a BCom with property in it as well, property management and various other degrees. But if they don't have a motor car...
Yeah, it's a problem.
You're
quite limited in your mobility.
Limited. So we find we have a lot of applicants which we can't take on because of that.
And you know, talking applicants, how many, I'm sure you in your 40 years of experience, you've mentored so many individuals. And what would you think the environment is like in absorbing a lot of mentors? Because for any business to be successful, you have to be mentored. And I'm sure
I personally trained hundreds of people over the years, and I'm glad to say we've made many millionaires.
Can I be one of those?
With pleasure. We'll have our own in-house economist. How about that?
Oh, yeah. No, that's beautiful.
Thank you, Doctor.
Yeah, no, thank you very much. Unfortunately, Greg here says we need to wrap up. It's been absolutely beautiful coming through. We certainly learned so much about intricacies of real estate environment.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, this was a very interesting conversation I've just had with Denise Zielinski, who is the CEO and founder of First Realty Estate, giving us nuts and bolts on the commercial environment, whether you're looking at residential, commercial, industrial, even pieces of land that you may be interested. We now know what are the educational insights or educational issues that one has to consider moving into this particular space. If you want to venture into real estate as a profession, she has obviously mentored more than 100 people. She made more than 100 million, multimillionaires.
I've made the million. I've assisted people in becoming multimillionaires.
Which means I'm sitting next to a multimillionaire myself. But that's a conversation for another day. Thank you very much. Thank you for coming.
It's been
absolutely beautiful. Great chance. Thank you very much for doing your stunning work. Betsy, thank you very much for organizing Denise here. Let's do this again next week. It's been absolutely beautiful. Shalom.
We've weathered the unexpected. We've stepped into a new world. And now it is the time for our businesses to re-emerge. Sure-footed, clear-headed, and strategically on point. It is a time for greater certainty, for accurate, actionable market research and business intelligence to make effective, up-to-date decisions. South Africa, that is how we move our businesses and economy forward. Plus 94 Research, the science of decision-making.